In between some stops in the Rockies to talk healthcare, President Obama is taking his family for a quick, a very quick trip to two national landmarks, the Grand Canyon and Yellowstone National Park. If you didn't know it, national parks are free this weekend for visitors. The first family's first stop is going to be Yellowstone, and we go now to Jerry Johnson. He is a lifelong resident and the former mayor, and we should mention the football coach of West Yellowstone, Montana. Okay, Jerry, I'd like to know, what kind of preparations do you make in Yellowstone for a big presidential visit?
Well, you know, it's been so secretive. There really hasn't been any preparation in West Yellowstone other than getting the airport ready.
Okay.
For his arrival.
I was really hoping for presidential s'mores, but no, huh?
No, not that we know of. We don't even know how long he'll be here.
Okay, and having presidents in Yellowstone, is that a big deal for you guys, or it's a sort of hoo-hum?
No, it's a big deal. It always has been. You know, it's great publicity for national parks and, you know, West Yellowstone in general, and they always come with a positive outcome.
All right. Well, have a good visit then. Take care.
All right. Thank you.
Now, Yellowstone is familiar stomping grounds for a number of presidents, but it was Theodore Roosevelt who most famously set out on a 66-day expedition across the Wild West. We are talking 14,000 miles, 25 states from the Midwest to the coast of California. We should mention Roosevelt saved over 234 million acres of parkland. He saw this as essential to the country. We're going to go now to Douglas Brinkley. He joins us this morning from Austin, Texas. He is a history professor whose latest book is The Wilderness Warrior, Theodore Roosevelt and the Crusade for America. In this book, he maps out Roosevelt's cross-country trek and also gives us a more nuanced look into his legacy as a conservationist. Professor Brinkley, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Now, I think it's interesting. The subtitle is The Crusade for America, not The Crusade for Wild America or the National Parks of America. Talk about the significance of the outdoors for Theodore Roosevelt's vision of this country.
Well, he thought wilderness areas were essential for democracy. As a young man, he had asthma. He had grown up in New York City, and he found nature to be a curative. He'd spent teenage years in the Catskills and Adirondacks, then ended up ranching in the Badlands of North Dakota. And beyond seeing the scenery as being magnificent or wanting to have game and fish, wanting to make sure forests were preserved, he found that there was spiritual renewal that could be had in the great outdoors.
Now, spiritual renewal and the outdoors as essential to democracy. Can you fuse that together for me a little bit more?
Well, you know, he would go and disappear into the wild. And so, for example, when he first went to Yellowstone and he would camp and see the Great Falls there and watch the elk herd, and he felt that your spirit got renewed. Part of it was out of a fear of hyper-industrialization, that we were desensitizing ourselves to nature and weren't able to read the lessons of the wild. It was a kind of backlash he had against over-urbanization. And he started imagining Theodore Roosevelt, particularly in the West, smaller-sized cities surrounded by, if you'd like, green belts of forest, because he was very worried about the arid conditions in the West, worried about water. Yet he wanted a lot of population centers, so he also built dams, which some environmentalists still to this day hold Roosevelt accountable for.
Right. But in a way, it almost sounds like you're making an argument that he was our first green president.
He was. And you know, today we use the word green all the time. There's a green issue of Vanity Fair, or everybody's talking about the coming green revolution. Roosevelt liked the word wild. He thought that he had gone to Europe and, for example, climbed the Matterhorn, and found no wildlife on top. He looked all over for animal life, couldn't find any. He wanted to make sure that our Rockies and Appalachians and Cascades and all the great mountain ranges was teeming with wildlife.
Professor Brinkley, I got to stop you for a minute, because one of the reasons why his reputation is a tough one to truly be nuanced about, if he had been at the top of the Matterhorn and found wildlife, he would have shot it.
Well, that's right. But there's a difference between shooting game and replenishing game. I mean, the first game reserves in the United States, including, you know, the Wichita Mountains, the first national game reserve in Oklahoma, or the Flathead Reservation for buffalo and Montana. I can go on and on. This was a largely aristocratic hunters that started having this vision of repopulating the plains. The difference is that people need to draw is between what was a market hunter, somebody who was killing multiple animals, or the lone hunter going after one animal. And if in a case, for example, of songbirds, egrets, heron, birds that were not edible, Roosevelt is the person who pushed through the hardest laws, almost made it impossible to shoot such a bird. In fact, he created the string of reserves around Florida, and his first four game wardens, two were murdered in the Feather Wars of Florida trying to protect the bird life.
But, you know, he made the distinction between game birds, as you say, and songbirds. But if that's the case, then he wouldn't have been able to save the passenger pigeon.
No, but he became against the passenger pigeon killing it because they became so scarce. In fact, with his uncle Robert Roosevelt, they promoted the clay pigeon that sportsmen had to turn to shooting those plates if they wanted to join a rod and gun club or something, then instead of killing real birds. And in fact, Roosevelt's campaigns constantly against the killing of birds like that. It's, you have to remember, when you deal with hunting, it's 100-some years ago, it's a rural America out there.
Right.
And it's really Roosevelt who's pushing through the laws that, look, we have to have a hunting license. There's a game season. If an animal is getting scarce, then you have to call off hunts. Famously, the teddy bear gets created when he puts his hand up in Mississippi and says, no, you never shoot a captured animal. He was trying to teach an America that was very kind of libertarian in its beliefs and the thinking that you could shoot anything that moved. And Roosevelt was saying the federal government is saying, no, you can't do that. And he received fierce backlash for these licensing and rotating seasons and banning a killing of some animals from all over the United States, particularly in the South, which couldn't stand Roosevelt for the federal government imposing itself in their lives, telling them suddenly they're going to go to jail for killing an egret.
Okay, Douglas Brinkley, we have not much time left, and I just want to be able to let people know that you actually resurrect several conservationist heroes who've been lost to obscurity. Quickly, I want the 10-second version of this obscure Republican congressman from Iowa, who, thanks to you, people will know about now.
We've got to celebrate the legacy of John Fletcher Lacey, congressman from Iowa, who ran the House Land Committee and did more to save wild areas. He visited what are today all of our national parks and would come back to TR and tell him how we can save places like Mesa Verde in Colorado
or
Crater Lake in Oregon.
I'm so sorry. The time is just as precious as wildlife here. Thank you so much. That's Douglas Brinkley, the author of The Wilderness Warrior.